Welcome to AMC Press & Co., episode 591, Red Hood and Russell Correspondents will be back Wednesday night, but the voices behind the characters are on. And on tonight's episode, we welcome William Daniels and Bonnie Bartlett!
Hello!
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 And Bonnie is here, too.
Yes, we have questions for both of you, and we're happy that you're on.
Yes, we are.
We have Johnny Dubell, who is our sound guy. Our other correspondent slash person who couldn't be with us because he fell ill. Eric Atkinson says that he is really sorry that he missed it, but he sends his regards. And I am James Barnaker, who Allison and I and Johnny all co-produce this kind of podcast together.
Yeah.
And together we make up AMC Press & Co. So, our first question of the night
is, what inspired you to write your first memoir?
Did you hear that, Bill?
No.
What inspired you to write your first memoir?
I wasn't working. I had nothing else to do. I don't know. I picked up a pen, God knows why, and I started from when I was a little boy and my sister and I were a song and dance team that my mother had put us into, and it was personally I worry about my memory, so I was testing myself. So I started from the beginning of when we were in New York and performing and took it on from there. And that's how the whole thing started. It was just a test of my memory. I didn't think anybody would really be interested in reading it.
He wrote it out in longhand on yellow paper.
Oh, jeez.
He wrote it out on longhand and yellow paper.
Yeah.
That's quite amazing. You know.
That's amazing.
That's Roald Dahl used to do the same thing. So I can relate having perused some of his stuff, but
yeah, I just bought a biography of his.
Yeah, no, the biography
of who? One?
Roald Dahl.
Who?
Roald Dahl. He is married to a friend of mine, Pat.
You mean Pat McConnell?
What?
You mean Patricia O'Neill?
Her name wasn't Patricia O'Neill.
Oh, that was his wife. But anyway, sorry. What was it like working on One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
When did I start working on it?
What was it like? She seems to be interested in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the play.
As a play.
And what was it like taking on Harding?
Excuse me?
The character. What did you think about the character?
Well, I wasn't crazy about the character. You know, he was a young man who was running away from a marriage, who was insecure, and had questions about his self-worth and all of that. It was a very unsympathetic role the way it was written, and so you have to acknowledge that and deal with it. But I was glad when it was over.
Were all those aware?
Speak up.
We're all aware about Edward Albee and the great loss that everybody's feeling all around the world, but what we wanted to know was, can you tell us about your time and experience in Zoo Story?
Could I tell you about my experience with the Zoo Story?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
And the response, Bill, in South America and so forth.
What?
The response in South America and so forth.
Bonnie.
I'll shut up.
Okay. first of all... you have to understand that I'm not one of these actors who is anxious to work. I just look at the material and I think, I see all the problems. I have friends who think, oh, God, I got this wonderful job, and you know, and all that. I have never been that way. So the zoo story comes along, and Milton Katselis, who was the director, was going to be the director, had seen my work at Lee Strasberg's acting class, and he thought, you know, that I could be this fellow who sit on the bench. And I looked at the thing, and I think, what am I doing? I'm sitting on the bench. Why, this guy, other guy talks, a bloody blue streak? No, I don't think so. So my friend Jerry Friedman and my wife said, Bill, this is a very good play. By who? This Edward Albee? I don't know who the hell, you know, nobody did. So I asked backwards into that, as I have done on a number of occasions. And suddenly it turned out that I realized how important my part was. And I realized it because when I was sitting on the bench and this man comes along and says, I've been to the zoo. And I just look up from my book, the whole audience fell apart. Huge laugh. So I'm thinking, well, maybe he didn't talk to me. So I looked over my shoulder, another huge laugh. So it turns out that this guy on the bench, which I thought was not an important part for me to do because it didn't have many words, was the part that all the audiences that I've ever played, including South America and, I don't know, all over this country, they identified with the man on the bench, not this strange fellow who came by and said, I've been to the zoo. So I suddenly realized, very belatedly realized that I was playing a very important part.
In a very important play.
You know, in a very important play. Mm-hmm. And Edward sat there and listened to us as we read this thing. And when he starts tickling me, I said, this makes me very uncomfortable. And Edward Albee said, that's what you're supposed to feel. Mm-hmm. And so I lived with that. And I had absolutely no idea that this play introduced one of our foremost playwrights, and that it was a wonderful play. I guess I'm just stupid, you know. And I just sit there, and then suddenly I realize that the audience is identifying with me. And this happened in South America. This happened upstate. It happened everywhere I played it. That the audience identified with me because they all know about these instances that may happen where somebody comes along and says something strange to them that frightens them, and they feel like, who is this strange person and why am I in this situation? Anyway, that's the way it went. And I'll stop talking.
Edward was so darling. I had lost a baby, and they knew about it. And then when we adopted our first boy, Edward sent us this lovely note said, Dear Bill and Bonnie, congratulations on Michael David. I am told, and I do believe, that these little bumbles can, with the proper love and attention, turn out into very nice people. Which we have that letter. And it's, you know, he was adopted and had a horrible, horrible childhood.
Yes, with the Albees, yeah.
And it was just lovely. And anyway, we have lost a great playwright, yes.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, I'm a playwright besides hosting this podcast. And I've got to say, I was crushed because I had a similar, I played your role, Bill, actually, in college. And it occurred to me that in terms of who's on the bench, right?
Mm-hmm.
I take things from point of view when I'm acting, and who's on the bench? I was just like, okay, if I was on a bench and I'm being questioned by somebody, what is that going to look like? You know?
Mm-hmm. What exactly what?
Is that
what exactly
look like?
would have it been looking like to an audience member, you know? And
what
you know,
you
that's
say,
how
Bonnie?
I approached it. But we have different approaches, obviously. I mean,
well, every actor would have.
Everybody, yeah.
What was it like on the set of St. Elsewhere?
Oh, it was a very happy time for us. First of all, it was a well-written and well-cast show. Actually had to fight for its existence. As I recall, it was dropped after the first season, except Brandon Tartikoff liked it and said, I want to see it again, because he liked the type of audience.
He liked the numbers between. It didn't get great ratings,
and
but the ratings.
Of course, then we ran for six seasons. So it was a very happy experience. We had marvelous actors like Denzel Washington and Ed Flanders and
Ed Begley.
So, and Mark Harmon, and you know, it was well cast, it was well written, it was upon a situation where I, in my character, said, the way I got my wife to stop smoking is I stood on the front lawn and I yelled about her smoking, and she gave it up. So then we're at this ceremony of
Doctor of the Year Award.
Yeah, that. And I excuse myself to the men's room, and she reaches into her bag and lights up a cigarette. And that was the joke, that he didn't have any influence upon her. And, you know, it was a show that was serious, but also had lovely humor. And we all got along tremendously well, which I find astounding these days. There was no personality clashes or anything like that. Bruce Paltrow, the producer, was a wonderful producer, who we lost too soon. And it was a very happy time for Bonnie and I to be involved.
And he loved having me on the set because he could boss me around.
What?
I said you loved having me on the set so you could boss me around.
So I could boss you
around?
Yeah,
everybody'd say, how do you let him talk to you like that? They didn't know we were married. And he said, how can you let him talk to you like that? And I said, oh, it's okay. He's right most of the time. he loves to say terrible things to me.
Oh, well, I mean, she didn't know her lines.
He'd say, shall we take 10 minutes off while Miss Bartlett learns her lines?
What? Oh, Jesus.
He was terrible.
Oh.
He was terrible. But it's funny. And we enjoyed it.
This is the way we talk to each other. She knows how much I...
Yeah, I
respect her talent and how much I love her.
Yeah,
I there's a little bit of Dr. Craig in Bill Daniels, maybe more than a little bit.
Yeah, what was the impact of 1776?
That was amazing, right, Bill? Did you hear that, Bill?
No.
The young man said, "What was the impact of 1776 on your career?"
Thought.
Oh my goodness. 1776. Well, let me think a second. First of all, it was a musical during the Vietnam War, and I thought it was a ridiculous thing to be doing. And I'm wrong on all of these things, you have to remember. And then when we got into rehearsal, I realized, am I talking about the right show, Mom?
Yes, 1776, the stage. He probably didn't see it. He probably is talking about the movie, but you're going to talk about the stage.
What?
He probably didn't see it. You're going to talk about the stage. He's too young to have seen that. But he probably saw the movie.
Oh, they want to talk about the film?
Either one. You could talk about just what it meant to you.
Well, it was a big part, the biggest part that I'd ever had, certainly on Broadway. I've had smaller parts, funny parts, and things like that. But this was a lead part.
In a musical.
In a musical with 9 numbers that I were involved with, musical numbers, singing, and so forth.
And tell them about when you first realized what it was going to be, when you heard the song.
You mean when we were out of town?
When you heard the song with, the guys, when you came in.
Oh, yeah. Evidently, the scene is in the Congress in 1776. And evidently, they had all these other actors playing in the various states, and they must have been working on them. The first time I came to rehearsal, and I had these lines before they did anything. I had these lines that said something like, "By God, I've had this Congress," and so forth. And suddenly, these voices came out. Beautiful, full voices saying, "Sit down, John. Sit down, John. For God's sake, John, sit down." And I thought, hey, maybe we have something here.
It was a gorgeous male chorus.
Yeah, it was. It knocked me over. I hadn't heard them, and so it was when it was at that point that I gave up this idea that we were doing this at the wrong time with Vietnam and all that, and I realized that maybe we had something. Certainly with his male voices.
There is a tribute to that in Hamilton, isn't there?
Yes.
Where, honey, you're going to have to speak up.
Bill, she's asking about Hamilton. In other words, a tribute.
You're asking me about Hamilton?
Yeah, because of the 1776. I think she means when you met with Lin-Manuel.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, when I'm...
And that is in the back of the book. That discussion that they had is in the very back of the book.
The first time I met Lin-Manuel was over the telephone. The publicity person was putting us into contact that... to arrange that when I was going to New York anyway, would I meet with him and so forth. And he got on the phone and he said, "Hi, Mr. Feeney." And I thought, oh, my God. Don't know that character. But anyway.
Because he was a big fan. Lin-Manuel was a big fan of Mr. Feeney.
Oh, and so are we.
Lin-Manuel.
Oh, really?
Miranda.
We were
a huge friend.
Yeah.
Not only of 1776, from which he said he was an inspiration, but also from Mr. Feeney.
The publicity person wanted to put us together with some pictures before his show. And so we were going to New York anyway. So I went over to the theater and the first thing he said to me was, "Which dressing room were you here at?" And he was talking about 1776, and this was the 46th Street Theater, which he was also playing. I said, "Well, the dressing room? Let me think a second. I think it was stage right." He said, "Oh, well, I mean, the... who did he say was in there?"
I think the stage manager.
Yeah, he said that. The stage manager is in there. I said, "Well, I don't know. I could be wrong." But
and
anyway.
When we went to his dressing room, you have to go way upstairs. And he had a little tiny dressing room.
Yes.
A little tiny dressing room.
Yeah. But he's that kind of guy, you know. He's totally unpretentious, very outgoing, very...
Very brilliant.
And very brilliant, obviously.
And
very brilliant.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yes.
Rather brilliant. I mean, we own Hamilton, the cast album. And we love...
Is there something?
We own Hamilton. mm-hmm. the cast album.
Yes.
And we love it.
Oh, yes. It's remarkable.
Love it. Yeah. More on 1776, though. When it won all those Tonys, right?
What?
Even though when it won all those Tonys, did you ever think that it was going to be adapted into a film version?
Did I ever think that what?
It would be adapted to into a film version. What, in other words, Jack Warner. Talk a little bit about Jack Warner.
Oh, well, Jack Warner saw this show, and he did something unusual, you know. He could have hired,
movie stars.
Movie stars. But he loved the show so much that he offered the entire cast to come to California to do the film.
And the director,
which was very unusual. Usually a place like Warner Brothers would put stars into it, I don't know, Audrey Hepburn, whoever. But to take the whole show and bring it to Warner Brothers to film was extraordinary, but it was how he felt about the show, and I think that was quite a compliment.
What was it like working with Herb Gardner and Fred Coe?
Excuse me,
Bill. What was it like? They're not going to like this. What was it like working with Herb Gardner and Fred Coe? That's two different people altogether.
Well,
no, I know
all,
that.
Yeah.
Herb Gardner wrote the play.
Right.
And, produced it.
Finally directed it.
We have to be talking about 1,000 Clowns.
We are. We're talking about 1,000 Clowns.
So what was the question?
What was it like working with them? Well, that's a long story, but it's because Fred Coe really was not much of a director. So the actors really, I don't know if you want to go into that. But Herb Gardner was a dear friend and a wonderful guy, and he should have written more wonderful plays.
That
was a very interesting. You'll have to read the book to get all of those experiences, because very very long and complicated. Bill goes into it very deeply as to how each scene was done and all that. You know what I mean?
And you know what happened with the personnel involved in 1,000 Clowns was rather a long story.
Now we're down to Kit. What?
Now you're what down to Kit?
Kit, who still Kit. remains active. He is still doing the voice of Kit. For people.
Oh, not down to Kit. Sorry.
Well, I got to tell you, that's kind of an interesting story, but it's in the book.
Yeah, it's all in the book. But he has huge fans from Kit. Tell him the story about England, Bill. We were signing autographs and stuff.
Oh,
this
you mean
funny.
For Kit?
Yeah.
Oh, Bonnie and I went over there because they were paying us, and it was a signing kind of thing where people paid, I think, £15 or some ridiculous thing to get on a line and have a picture of me as Kit or the car. And they would come up and I would sign it, and they got their signed photograph, which I guess they were happy with. But this one man came up. And he was, well-dressed, mid-30s, looked like a businessman. And I'm signing the picture, and he said, as I'm signing it, he said, excuse me, may I ask you a question? And I kept signing, and I said, sure, what? He said, well, when you were Kit, where were you in the car? And I looked up, I thought he was joking. I said, you mean, was I under the hood or in the trunk? He said, yeah. I said, well, no, sir. I was in a studio recording the voice. And he, He kind of went away disappointed.
That's so funny.
That's hysterical. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh my god. That's great. That's great.
But I think you guys will enjoy the book. You really will. It's very readable and it's very much Bill and his voice, and you'll enjoy it.
I mean, we do have a question for our people. I guess a few questions about Boy Meets World and your time on Girl Meets World versus Boy Meets World and all that.
What was the audition process like for Boy Meets World?
Bill has never auditioned. He is amazing. I mean, gone to an audition, but only when he has the part. He didn't have to audition for Boy Meets World at all.
No.
Wow. So then, can you tell us about Mr. Feeny then?
What?
Can you tell us about Mr. Feeny and how...
Michael Jacobs wrote the show, produced the show, and he called Bill and asked him to do it.
And that was it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So, about...
When you read the book, you'll see about all of this stuff, because it's all in there, and it's all... Mm-hmm. He has had a very... It isn't a normal actor's career.
No.
The title of the book originally was I Thought I'd Know, but the publisher didn't want that because of the rape culture. They didn't like that title, so they changed it. But that's really what the book is about, because he has been so negative, not when he works, but he never wanted to go into the job. Then once he gets it, he works very hard and it's very good. But he's very negative at first. Very negative, which is very unusual.
They're very fun. They're hilarious.
Yeah.
But do we know if there's going to be an audiobook for Bill's novel?
An audiobook?
Yeah, audio
I hope book. So. I hope so. There should be, with his voice particularly.
Oh, God, that would be amazing.
That would be...
Yeah. That'd be outstanding.
Are we finished now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess that's all that we have to say. So there you have it. There you have it. That is Mr. Feeny and, well, Mrs. Feeny, Bonnie Bartlett, and William Daniels. And there will be an audiobook. Yes to all of that. And we thank them for being on. Even though the connection is a bit spotty. Hopefully, and we will see you on Wednesday, I guess. In terms of more of our stuff. And so this book ends, I guess, our first official interview of season 6.
Yeah.
And we're ending of season 5. And we will see you on Wednesday.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Yes. Have a great night.
Bye.